Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, and every now and then we pick an overtly religious movie or book to talk about, and that's what we're doing today. This is episode number 128, and we're talking about a movie that I selected called Ostrov, O-S-T-R-O-V. Or The Island. It's a movie from 2006 from Russia.
Yes, as I said last time, I've really never seen Russian movies except for, you know, ones with vampires in them. So there's that tendency for me to think about Slavic literature and movies and art and everything as being kind of having this very heavy, melancholy strain.
Mm-hmm.
I feel this didn't do anything to disillusion me.
It definitely had that. It definitely, you know, the only other Russian movie I can think of that I've seen is, besides the, what was that called? Night Watch.
Yeah, I Day saw Watch. That. Night I saw Watch that. And Day Watch.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen Day Watch. I've seen Night Watch.
Okay.
But then there's one other one that was almost one continuous shot, and the name escapes me.
Oh, we watched that too. The Ark, Russian.
Yeah,
Club,
that's it. That's it.
Which is shot at the Hermitage. And mm-hmm. Yeah, that was amazing where they just go through and it was one continuous shot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. It recreates all these moments of Russian history, unfortunately, with very little dialogue. So if you don't really know Russian history, you're guessing a lot of the time. But it was very, very interesting. Yeah, we liked it for that quality.
Yeah, that was quite an achievement.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. We're going to do this in one shot. Ready, go.
Oh, well, and they had a certain time period. They could only, like, they had to redo the ballroom scene. They had to redo it like three times because that fell apart. And they're like, we're going to be kicked out pretty soon. So we have to get this going because they were in the Hermitage Museum. And they did it. It was crazy.
Wow.
But that's one of those you just have to let wash over you.
Yeah, yeah.
Although we did entertain ourselves by trying to pick out what was going on in history. We know just enough to probably get most of it wrong.
Well, cool. Yeah, so this movie, it starts off, the main character is a guy named Anatoly, who at the beginning is on a coal barge, I guess, Russian coal barge during World War II. And a Nazi boat pulls up alongside and, you know, clearly there, or it's always interesting to remember that we were on the same side, right?
Right.
Yeah, being a child of the 80s for me. Well, not born in the 80s. I graduated high school in the 80s. That's what I meant.
Okay, good. I was doing mental arithmetic.
You're like, wait a minute.
Right? But yeah, those formative years.
Yeah, my formative years were in the 80s when Russia was the big bad guy.
Yeah.
He ends up in this situation. This Nazi captain puts him in a situation because he's so afraid of dying. German captain gives him a gun and says, you have to shoot the skipper of the boat you're on in order for you to survive. Well, actually, he doesn't even say that, does he?
He just says shoot him.
Yeah, shoot this guy.
But this is after, because he didn't want a beating, he betrayed the captain's whereabouts in the first place.
He pulled him out in the first place. Yeah, yeah. He was completely afraid.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he ends up doing that. He shoots the captain. The captain falls overboard. And then the German ship goes away. And he's at the beginning, he feels victorious. And then immediately turns to, oh, what have I done? And he looks over the edge for the captain and can't find him. Yep. So that's the opening scene. And then it fast forward to something like 30 years. And mm-hmm. what we see is where the movie is for the rest of the time. We see Father Anatoly from, he's at on a monastery on an island. And it's stark. It's very cold. It's like a cold weather island, I guess you'd call it. It's in winter, so it mm-hmm. snows, and he is constantly bringing coal from that same coal barge, which had basically went aground.
Sunk. Yeah. Yeah,
it went aground right here on this island.
Bomb on it, right? So
yeah,
the Nazis exploded it. So.
Right. So he's still, you know, the coal barge is big enough. He's still dealing with the coal from that same boat. So he hasn't even left the boat. He doesn't live on the boat anymore. He lives in the boiler room of this monastery. And he is one of their number. But he is very different from the other ones.
Yeah, he's, even though the monastery is pretty isolated, the boiler room is isolated because it's set apart from the main buildings. And it took me a while to figure out. I was like, what is he doing there? Why is he burning this coal? What's going on? And then we went, oh, it must be connected through underground pipes or something. Yeah. Okay, we get it. But so he's continually shoveling coal, stoking the fire, which isn't easy.
Yeah.
And then he has a continual stream of applicants coming to him for prayer and guidance.
Yes. Yeah.
Which you do not see at the monastery. You just see them outside his little hut.
Yeah. And that's interesting. He's kind of famous in the region anyway. Well, even outside the region, people start to get word because near the end, the people that come from a long way.
Right.
People are just outside. They just, you know, want to talk to him. He's a holy man. And he can pierce right into your soul. He can see things. One of the things that I was interested in as I watched this was, you know, what the results were of what the advice he was giving people.
That's what we wondered.
Yeah, because we don't see that. So that would change my opinion of him, right?
Yeah.
You know, if he was giving people advice and it wasn't turning out for people, that would be interesting. But then I was sure that he was holy near the end when he did an exorcism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was a very powerful scene, I felt.
It was, it was interesting. Because I loved, maybe this is for later, but the dynamic between the possessed person and the person who brought her. I was like, I could really see this behavior driving someone to distraction.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And it would seem as if it were just being annoying, except that no doctor could fix it. It was so different from everything else. And I mean, because there was no obvious thing that we would think of as the Hollywood depiction of possession.
Right. True.
Though I knew what was wrong with her on the train.
Did okay? you? You knew it.
Well, I just figured she was acting so weird. And I felt, as a person, and I felt like, if she's being brought to Father Anatoly, what's left?
That's right. That's a good
possession.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, I have no idea. I'm just saying that's to me. I was like, huh, wonder if if she's possessed by the devil.
Yeah. So the movie really is about this guy, Anatoly, about Father Anatoly. He deals with two sets of people. He deals with the people that come to see him and the other monks. And both were interesting in their own respects. And the movie is very slow. I really liked it. It was a kind of a monastic slowness, almost a meditative thing. You know, there was a lot of times where we would just watch him move coal, you know, along this pathway. Or just watch him... he used to take a boat to another island and, you know, that had a lot of moss on rocks and things, and he would just go there and he would, you know, it was like he was taking a vacation from his aloneness to another alone place, you know, and then, but he seemed to do his deep prayer and meditation on this other island.
Right.
And,
he poured his soul out.
Yeah. There. He would pour his soul out. And there were times where he was just completely broke down from guilt. Even after all these years, he was still carrying that murder that he thought that he had committed.
That he thought he'd committed. Come on, man. Scott. Spoilers, everyone.
Oh, sorry.
That's right. If you're listening to this, you've probably seen it.
I apologize, yes.
No, that's okay. Well, yeah, and I would say when you talk about its slowness, it's got that pacing of what's classically considered maybe an art movie, or such as when we saw Of Gods and Men, another religious movie we talked about a while back.
Yeah, another one
it's
I really
like.
It's got
that slow, deliberate, pulling you into the life of Father Anatoly, though his life doesn't ever seem to be uneventful. Even when he's shoveling coal, you feel like there's stuff going on, but...
Yeah.
Because he is,
it's
I would
purposeful,
say.
It's purposeful, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And partway into it, early on, once you see him in his little hut, I was like, oh, a movie about a holy fool. Got it.
Hmm.
And I hadn't really looked into the concept of holy fool much, but I was aware of it. And I thought of it as kind of being a Slavic sort of a thing. And so we were looking it up right before this, and it turns out the Russians do have a particular affinity, or holy fools have an affinity for the Russian Orthodox Church. They've got 20, something like 26 saints who were holy fools, and they're people who just are, they seem crazy from the outside. And so what they do seems really irritating and nonsensical and stupid and ridiculous, but the people around them can tell they're being driven by God, and God's communicating through them. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, because the other people know that he is, you know, definitely being driven by God.
Yeah, and he's definitely one of those holy fool types, because we can't really see the logic a lot of the time of what he's doing. But when you see the results or the way people react when he talks to them, you get this sense that even though he's just kind of letting it all hang out unfiltered, that God is using him. So,
yeah. And that's the thing, you know, at the, I guess we are well into spoiler territory since I jumped into it, but you know, everyone that he sees, you know, they come to him with a problem, and he helps them by telling them what they need to do, basically. Right. Like, the first woman is pregnant and she wanted a blessing for an abortion.
I was like,
and he
what?
Just let her have it. It was just like, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. But then at the end, he got really tender. And then at the very end, he said, get out of here. But I, you know, and it was fascinating. And then, you know, you feel like, you know, her life was A-okay. But the one that I really wondered about was this lady comes and she said that she lost her husband in the war. And yeah, and then he told her that her husband was alive and that she needed to go to him in France.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know how that turned out.
Yeah, sell the farm.
Yes,
blah, blah, blah.
Sell everything. Yeah, sell everything and go to France.
See, for me, the one that captured my attention was the mother who brings her crippled boy.
Oh, yeah.
And he basically, okay, now he's, you know, it's going to be okay, but you've got to stay till tomorrow and take him to Mass, and then he's got to have communion, and then he'll be healed. And she's like, well, I've got work tomorrow. You know, like, you get the feeling like, I'll lose my job. This is Russia. We're not waiting around being nice to people. And he's putting this dilemma in front of her. What matters more, your son or your job? And she's getting back in the boat going, will you said he was healed. It's okay. And he comes and he grabs the kid out of the boat.
Says, yeah, walks out into the water.
Yeah, walks out into the water, grabs the kid out of the boat, and says, no, forget it. I'm taking the kid back. I'm going to make sure he gets healed. And I thought that it shows really clearly at that point the dilemma that we're put between when we have to do something completely on faith that goes against every normal thing and that we can't see the result of, so that we've got to put the things that matter in regular life on the line, like a job or like the lady selling her farm. Maybe that's the reason we don't see what happens, is because these people are in the same situation. Do they believe what Father Anatoly says or not? They have to go off and decide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And that's one of the things that this movie does. You know, we've talked before about how saints sometimes are extremes. And yet, you know, through these extremes, we see connections to our own lives, and they can change things. And I felt like that's what this movie did. You're showing an example right there of, you know, we have little things in our own lives, you know, like, you know, well, Holy Week is coming, and, you know, we make decisions on what to participate in and, you know, what time to take off and what to do. You know, those are minor decisions compared to, you know, life-changing stuff.
Right.
But still, we're constantly faced with the worldly stuff versus the religious stuff, and you know, and faced with employers or whatever that don't understand, you know, or think that you're crazy or whatever. But we do it. You know what I mean? You know, Ash Wednesday, walking around with ashes on our foreheads. Everybody thinks we're nuts, and we make that decision that, well, this is important for me to participate in.
Yeah.
You know.
And to let other people know about. And
yeah, exactly.
Well, and because another example is, as you said, he's not just interacting with those people. Mm-hmm. There are the people in the monastery. And in a sense, they're just another facet of how hard this guy is to understand, because we can understand these monks a lot better than we can understand Father Anatoly. And to me, the thing that connects with, you know, do I sell my farm? Do I give up going to work tomorrow, is the bishop, I guess he was a bishop, the leader of the monastery.
Yeah.
Who
the
goes
abbot,
out there.
I guess. Yeah, Father Filaret. Yeah. Filaret.
Yeah. Does his room burn down? Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he and the funny thing is that, because it can be funny, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
It's bleak. But although I was cold the entire time I watched this.
It was. I got up halfway in this time and got a cup of tea.
Yeah, yes.
I have to comfort myself. It's cold, man.
You're definitely
definitely
on that
a cold, cold movie. Yeah.
But they're getting ready for mass, I guess, and if that's what it's called in their religion, but. The whole time, Father Anatoly's facing sideways and bowing. And Father Job, another interesting character, keeps, you know, he turns him to the front, he turns back sideways and bows. And then finally, they look out the window that he's facing, and part of the building is on fire. And so they go put it out. Well, it's the bishop's room. And so he comes to stay with Father Anatoly, who he'd invited to come stay with him. Mm-hmm. He's continually trying to make life a little easier for Father Anatoly, who rejects it always.
Yeah.
And so he goes out there. And he's taking off his boots, and Father Anatoly says, "Wow, these are great boots." And it's the first kind of normal conversation like that. I'm like, "Whoop, warning, warning." And, "Oh, yeah, my bad feet. These are special boots." And I'm thinking, "Oh, those are going straight in the fire. I shouldn't have even mentioned them." Mm-hmm. And then he's, "Oh, this is a nice blanket." And it is a nice looking blanket. And he's putting it on this pile of coal he's going to sleep on. "Oh, yeah, we got that when we went to Greece, you know." And, I'm like, "Oh, I shouldn't have said that at all. Oh, no." And so, yeah, so halfway through the night, he wakes up and his boots are being burned. And he gets up off the bed, and Father Anatoly takes his blanket, throws it in the water, and it's floating away. And I am looking at his feet at that point going, because they're showing his feet with no shoes. He's running around. And I'm like, "Oh, those socks look great. Don't mention them. You'll have them right off your feet."
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But the thing that I liked about it was what we could see was needed, because he sits there, and instead of getting mad, he goes, "Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I was too attached to those things.
Yeah.
That was good. Thank you very much. It was a blessing.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's that same thing of what are we attached to that seems very simple that we don't realize.
Yeah. And again, you know, another extreme example. I mean, those may have been the only possessions that Phil Rhett had. And, the last of them are gone, but still it is. It's like, you know, when you have something that breaks or something and then you get so incredibly upset, you know, like a furniture or something like that.
Like my iPod?
Oh, like your iPod, right?
That I dropped on the, slipped right through my dry hand. I could feel it going. And I was like, no. Onto the garage cement floor.
Oh, dear.
Of course, it landed glass side down. Shatter.
Shoot, yeah.
And actually, you know what was funny is I think this is why I related to the bishop, because I was upset, of course. Mm-hmm. But I also kind of felt this sense of freedom. It meant I wasn't going to be always listening to something in the car, which has been the hardest thing for me because I can't find a radio station I like. So I'm just having to drive around with my own thoughts, the torture of it. But so what I've started doing is using my laptop as a radio. And so I'll be in the kitchen and I'll turn that on and listen to part of an audiobook, but I can't take it all over the house. Mm-hmm. I can't have it, you know, in certain places where I would have listened to my iPod before. And so in a sense, that relief is there. I mean, I didn't send it off. This happened Saturday maybe, and I didn't send it off until yesterday to get fixed. Mm-hmm. So that can be really true. You just need that wake-up call of, you know, back off.
Yeah, this attachment. Right. Yeah, and then, so that's Phil Rhett, and then there's also Father Job, right?
Yeah,
who he's the first monk, other monk that we see, and he goes out. The first encounter he has with Anatoly that we see, they know each other before this, but he goes in and he's talking to him, and Anatoly says to him, "Why did Cain kill Abel?" You know, because Anatoly is very upset about this guy because Anatoly is constantly doing things to him. Like when he sees, when he sees Father Job headed his way, he runs out and he puts black stuff, coal, oil and things all over the handle of the door and then goes back inside and, you know, and then Job knocks on the door and he says, "Come in." And Job's like, "There's black stuff all over your door handle."
It's like, Job knows that he did it. He says, "You did this on purpose."
Yeah, exactly.
For me. Why did you do this? Yeah, I just want you to like me.
Right. Yeah. And I felt at that point that, you know, Father Job, you know, this question, you know, why did Cain kill Abel, to me revealed that, you know, if Father Job is like, "Well, I'm doing everything right, why aren't I the guy that people come to and are helped by? You know, why isn't it me? Why is it you? You don't do anything. You're just crazy. And God somehow has chosen you over me." And that's how he felt.
Because he's the one who keeps turning Father Anatoly to the front when he's praying to the side. He made me think of... I don't know, like an office manager. He's very, I could relate to him. You know, he just wants things to get done right, and he wants to do the best job he can. And you don't expect to see that in that monastery. But, of course, there are all kinds of people who would be there.
Yeah.
And they bring themselves with them, so they've got to be worked on to get holier.
Yeah. So, yeah, Father Job, I guess he didn't understand, you know, and I guess people around him wouldn't be able to understand. And even, you know, he goes to Father Phil Rhett, even Father Job, and talks to him about Anatoly. You know, how do I deal with this? Or, you know, what is he? You know, I don't understand. You know, but Phil Rhett is just trying to tell him to be patient with this guy. But I liked that interaction in this, you know, the whole Cain and Abel question from Anatoly. But it was almost like a prodding of Father Job, too. And, you know, it's just like, I can't explain it either. Because Anatoly is completely filled with he doesn't feel like he's worthy of any of this. It's like he's almost a fraud. He feels so incredibly guilty. But when he does this stuff, he even pretends that he's not Father Anatoly to these people. He's like, let me go talk to him. I'll go talk to him. I'll leave this door open so you can hear me.
Yeah.
But it's just so odd.
Also, I feel like when he said, the why did Cain kill Abel, he wanted an answer for himself, but it was being used both ways. I feel like a lot of the times when he did stuff, like when he responded about the abortions question, he was just, like I said, he's unfiltered.
Yeah.
But so he was talking to her, but he was also just expressing his own thoughts about it. And excuse me. He a lot of times when he would do those confusing things, I felt like he was doing them because he himself was still obviously struggling with his great sin. But because God is what I like to think of as super economical, he would have that shine out on the person who needed it most a lot of the time too.
Right.
Like, especially with Brother Job. But like when he was looking out and blessing the fire that's burning down the bishop's room, the reason he was doing that is because it would bring it to him later and he would be able to show the bishop his lesson, which is to get rid of these things. I don't think he knew that. I think that's why it's that holy fool concept. Mm-hmm. They're just responding to God's promptings as they feel them. You know, it's not that he's planning.
I like that thought. So he's blessing the fire because he knows that something good will come of it?
Or that it's God's fire.
Right.
It's happening. It's a good thing. He doesn't know why. Later on, this other stuff happens and he is saying, oh, you don't need these boots. You don't need this stuff. But he's not judging Father or Bishop Philaret or whatever his name is. He's just, this is just what he's doing. It's what he sees at the moment. He just does it.
Interesting. Yeah. So what was Anatoly, when you say he wanted an answer for himself, what answer was he looking for?
Why did Cain kill Abel? He killed the captain.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with Cain and Abel? Just killed my brother?
He wanted to stay alive. He wanted the Nazis' favor. Mm-hmm. He was terrified. He didn't want to get beaten. He didn't want to get killed. And so he instantly gave up the captain and he stood there with the gun in his hand. He didn't throw it down. He was holding it. And granted, when the Nazis kind of came and shoved him around is when the gun went off. But he was Cain. You know, he killed Abel. Abel didn't do anything to deserve it.
Yeah, so
but he wanted to curry favor with the Nazis.
I understand the aspect of killing his brother, but the reasons that he did it were not similar to the reasons that Cain did it.
I think Cain wanted something from God.
Yeah, Cain wanted God's favor, right?
Right. Well, didn't he want the Nazis' favor?
Well, he wanted to be alive. Maybe he did. Yeah, well, I don't think you're wrong at all. I just think that's fascinating. I just think
in that sense, it turns on the same thing of what are you going to do to curry favor with somebody? It doesn't matter that he wanted to be alive versus Cain wanting praise, I guess, or favor from God.
Yeah.
He wanted favor from it's that idea of, it's like Job. Job has the same problem. Why does he want Father Anatoly to like him? I'm not sure, but he clearly does.
Yeah, I think that Father Job wanted to be like Anatoly really bad. I think that he was confused the same way that Cain was. It's like, Abel did a sacrifice and God favored it. And God, for some reason, didn't favor what Cain did. Right. And Father Job is like, well, I'm doing everything right, but this guy is getting what I feel like the reward is for doing it right. Right.
Okay.
And then that's the Cain and Abel thing that I got out of it.
So, I never understood Father Job's reasons.
Yeah. So he was just like, why is it you? Why is it you? Why isn't it me? And he's trying to understand that.
If what I've understood from reading various commentaries that made the most sense to me, so it may not be right, but the reason when you read the wording maybe it's the original wording for why Abel was favored over Cain is Abel brought the first fruits.
Mm-hmm.
Cain brought, you know, stuff, but it wasn't the very best. So Abel gave fully with a pure heart the very, very best. He didn't hold anything back. That's why he was favored. Cain could have been favored. He didn't bring the very, very best. Now, I'm not prepared for this, so we'd have to look it up. But that's my basic understanding. So if what you need to do is bring the very, very best, I guess what I'm going back to maybe is that Anatoly did not bring the very – he didn't even try.
He's yeah, and maybe – well, that's maybe the key because Father Job, Father Job is doing the things with this motive that is tugging at him.
Right. It's not the
first.
He's
like, I want to be this. I want to be this. Right. Therefore, I'm doing this. Whereas Anatoly is not like that. He's like, it's being given to someone who doesn't want it. Right. Or ask for it. Anatoly is not
all of himself.
It wasn't his goal to become a holy man.
Right.
Right. But it is Father Job's goal to become a holy man. And that alone might be preventing him from doing it.
Yeah. I mean, and it could even just be the dynamic that since I didn't necessarily catch the and I've seen it just once and I was trying to keep up with what was going on. Uh-huh. Even if that wasn't Brother Job's goal, mm-hmm. the very fact that he's trying to curry favor so hard with Father Anatoly, that's the wrong person.
Yeah, you're right.
You've got to look at what God wants from you, and it's a personal relationship with God and giving fully without reservation of the first fruits of the best. And that's what Anatoly has been led to after 30 years. But Father Job wants, he's trying to curry favor. He wants the quick and easy way. He wants whatever favor Anatoly can give him for whatever reason. So those are the wrong motives, you know, and that's kind of what the church goes on too, is that it's that internal, it's the reason you do something matters as much, if not more, than what you do. The ends do not justify the means.
Yeah, I like that. So you don't have to have your priest's favor, right?
Right.
Your priest is representing someone else, and that someone else is who the focus should be on.
Right.
Right.
It did make me think about Father Anatoly. One of the things my husband Tom said when we were watching this, and you first see him out on that island crying out to the heavens, you know, I'm so sorry, I can't, you know, mm-hmm. for his sin. Tom said, he's been living with this for 30 years. And I thought, at what point do we forgive ourselves for sin? Because his bishop tells him, God is forgiving, or, you know, God is merciful.
Yeah.
You know, you have to extend this to yourself. And in a sense, to me, the fact that Father Anatoly had to see that he didn't actually kill that guy, that he just shot him in the arm and the guy quietly swam away, and he's now an admiral and all these things. I'm like, in that sense, because then he's at peace. Then he does a almost a Jesus thing where he's like, now I give up my spirit and I'm dead in the coffin. I'm like, well, that's interesting. And I'm thinking, well, in that sense, he's failed.
Yeah.
Because he never accepted God's mercy.
You know, and that's really interesting. So that just clicked something in for me, because he kept saying about fear of God, right? Uh-huh. And how much, you know, when somebody asked him if he was afraid of dying, he said, no, I'm not afraid of dying, but I am afraid of standing before God.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, so it's almost as if, like you said, he had this part incorrect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's why he was afraid to stand in front of God. It was like, I've still got this peace in me that I, you know, I mean, what does that mean to carry that with you and not feel forgiven and not be able to forgive yourself? But he was acting as if God had not forgiven it. Right.
Because we can't, you know, don't we do that sometimes?
Absolutely. We do. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I was at Mass this weekend, and I I guess I hadn't seen the movie yet because we watched it Sunday night. But anyway, what suddenly came to my mind was an incident, an exchange I'd had with somebody that wasn't a sin in one sense, but in another sense, it was hurtful and mean. But it happened probably 20 years ago. And by the time I got myself to the point where I realized I really should apologize to this person, and I'm sure it didn't scar them and all this stuff, but it's haunted me, and it was 20 years ago. And I have to kind of go, I've said I'm sorry for it to God. If I saw that person and recognized them and it seemed appropriate, I would instantly go, hey, man, this happened, and I'm so sorry. And it would probably, I would force it because I'd still feel bad about it. But I still have to go, no, water under the bridge. You've done everything. You just have to let it go, because it's not, if I hold on to it, I'm not trusting God's mercy, right?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
That's part of how we learn to live also. And so in a sense, what just occurred to me when you were talking is God had to give Anatoly a lesson in his mercy at the very end by sending whatever that guy was, the admiral, to him to show, stop it. Stop beating yourself up. I would like you to have gotten to this. I felt like it was like, I would like you to have gotten to this point before now, but here.
But here,
I'm going to grant you peace,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
Good and faithful servant.
Yeah, so. I like that too. That's interesting.
Because he wasn't perfect. If we think he's perfect, we're, you know, no one's perfect. And so, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then we mentioned this earlier, but then, the person who he shot earlier, who is the admiral, his daughter is the one that required the exorcism that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so they traveled by train. So somehow this guy, now I want to watch it again and find out, how did this guy hear about, you know, I don't recall exactly how he heard about Father Anatoly.
What did they say? I didn't.
Yeah, I think that they must have said, well, maybe he just said, oh, there's a holy man here. Maybe he didn't elaborate, but I think that'd be interesting. But the, so he brings his daughter before Father Anatoly, and Father Anatoly says, well, she's not sick. She's possessed. You know, he knows immediately. And then very shortly after that, he puts her in a boat and takes her to his island, you know, the island that he usually spends in prayer. And then there's what I thought was a very powerful scene of exorcism where he just prayed while she ran around this island. Mm-hmm. And finally she fell down and the demon left her. But that was at that time, you know, all the stuff that we talked about it was like, I believed now that the lady who was told that her husband was still alive, he really was. And I, and the boy was healed. And, you know, I believed all this other stuff. And, you know, but again, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the focus on God and not him, that makes me think of that right now. It's like, okay, well, why didn't I believe those other things until this moment? Because it really wasn't Father Anatoly. It was always God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that shed some light on my life too, where, you know, it's not focused on Father Anatoly. Father Anatoly is this holy man who's got this perception and can help people, you know, and, you know, they can tell them out loud what God is probably telling them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But yeah, so it was an interesting thing for me personally that, well, at that moment I believed everything else, but now as I think about it, I'm like, well, why didn't I believe everything else? You know,
that's interesting because the moment of exorcism was actually very subtle. I mean, it's not as if they said, and here's a puff of smoke that shows the demon's gone. She just kind of lay there with a different expression on her face.
Yeah, but and I liked that. I liked that it wasn't overly, you know,
that was
Hollywood
totally fine because I looked at it and see what I wanted from that moment was for her to sit up and say something or give me a further sign that something was different.
Yeah, well, they give you that a little bit later, right? A little bit. Because he said, go ahead and cry. Remember?
Oh, no, I don't remember.
Okay, yeah. Very shortly after that, they were back in the...
Oh, yeah.
And then he said, go ahead and cry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she did. Yeah.
Yeah. Because heaven only knows. So,
right.
Right. And mm-hmm. I'd forgotten that. But, yeah, the thing I liked about that moment was the same thing that I liked about the healing of the little boy, is that he was just praying, and he was mostly praying about other stuff. When you hear, you know, because he's just kneeling, not even really looking at the person, and just, you know, thy will be done, and this and this and this, and have mercy on the sick, or whatever it is he's saying. Mm-hmm. And the intention is for that person. But
yeah, and the attention, and then he turns around and he's absolutely sure.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, you're healed now. You don't need those. You don't need those. You're good now. You know, and with no question whatsoever. It's just like, yeah, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the same with the demon possession. He's like, yeah, it's gone now. So, you know, go ahead and cry.
It was.
So it just this absolute surety after his prayers. But yeah. But it's not him doing it, right?
No, it's
exactly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I just so yeah.
Yeah, what makes this crazy person the font of God's grace? It's
that
he's so unfiltered that he'll just let it all hang out. I mean, because we can't all live like that.
Yeah, we certainly can't. And again, you know, it's that extreme thing. One of the things that I thought about, you know, right at the very beginning, when he's talking to the girl who wants a blessing for her abortion,
which is nuts.
was Padre Pio, because I have read some. I haven't read a lot about Padre Pio, but some I have. And one of the things that I remember reading about is how he would sometimes see into a person's soul and know how sinful they were. Or, you know, you need to get to confession. You need to do this because you've got some black soul going on right there. You know, some very dark things. And he could see that.
A lot.
And he did it a lot. Sometimes. And he was very, it wasn't like he was super nice about it. It was like he was very, you know, demanding.
Matter of fact,
right. Which is what I felt like Anatoly was doing.
Yeah.
So it reminded me of the stories I had read about Pio. Yeah.
Yeah, Padre Pio is one of my special buddies.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Well, okay, that's being too familiar, maybe. But I really, really, really like him.
Right.
Really,
so that's a true thing then. What I'm saying is true.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was crazy amazing. When you talk about somebody who did a lot of stuff that probably nobody around him understood, he could bilocate, which is be in two places at one time. He could do, and it's all the stuff that everybody looks at and goes, okay, now you're just making stuff up. But it was modern enough, like during World War I and II, that a lot of it's documented. I mean, they have photographs of this guy. So it's modern saint stuff.
Interesting.
But yeah, he was not exactly like Father Anatoly, but he did a lot of things that probably were hard to take. But, you know, that's the thing where people look at God and they say, oh, he's so mean. But every time, as C.S. Lewis said, when we're very happy, we might be very thankful, but we might not hear that whispering that's going on. God shouts in our suffering, he said, you know, because then we're focused, we pay attention. And it's not that God gives us suffering specifically, but he is going to use everything at his disposal.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sometimes it's just not nice, but it's like, I feel like I'm rambling, but it's like a parent who you have to discipline your child. If you make everything in life easy for your child's going to be a horrible adult and be miserable.
Yeah.
You have to discipline them. You have to show them, you know, here's how we do things, this, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And that's Padre Pio, and that's the what's coming through in Father Anatoly, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He can have a tender moment.
Right.
Your child will be a golden boy. But.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that was a good moment, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do like that. That's neat. But yeah, and then there's a lot of saints in history that have really shaken things up from, everybody knows what the right thing to do is, and we're going to do these things. Here's our list of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they blow up the list of stuff. And they say, the list of stuff is not the point. It's, you know, maybe there's something deeper there.
Well, St. Francis, you picked a book about also.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, I like that stuff. Probably because I'm such a list maker.
Well, you know,
I like a good list.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can appreciate the blowing up of a list too.
Yeah, it's freeing in some ways, but it's very difficult in others. You have to
absolutely
focus yourself and
people are different, like you said.
The list. Yeah. Yeah.
Father Filaret is different from Father Job, is different from Anatoly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They're different kinds of people.
This also made me think, what if Judas hadn't committed suicide? Because that's always the thing where somebody during one of the RCIA classes that we were small group sponsors for kept, I don't know why she and I kept arguing about this. She was not in my small group, but neither of us was going to let it go. And she kept feeling really sorry for Judas because she's like, the church is so hard on him. Somebody had to betray Christ. I'm like, but did it have to be him? It's not like he was picked from birth, you know, you'll be the one. It's we all make our own choices. And the thing that really condemns Judas above anything is that he committed suicide, because Peter also betrayed Christ, but he was sorry. And he didn't kill himself when Christ was resurrected. Peter was there going, I'm sorry. It made him a stronger, better person to have failed and seen that he needed God to come back, you know, to himself, to be, you know, to know himself better, right?
Right.
So that's, in that sense, that's Anatoly. He's betrayed the captain. He killed the captain, or was directly responsible for leading to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes around for 30 years being really sorry and not thinking he's forgiven. Well, that's Judas's situation, but Judas kills himself. He tries giving back the money. Nobody will forgive him. Oh, no, forget it. We're not taking the money back. You did this. Well, if he hadn't committed suicide and he'd waited around, Jesus would have been resurrected in 3 days and said, Judas, come here.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
What good things would he have done with his life? He may have wound up being a holy fool or being something else. God would have used him, and he would have known who he was, and think what a power he would have been.
Wow.
So that's the choice we all have, and that's kind of what and that's why I was like, oh, Father Anatoly is if Judas hadn't killed himself, in a sense.
How about that? Wow, I love that thought.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. And his just the resurrection for him comes 30 years later instead of 3 days.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I love it. Nice thought.
Oh, thank you. I think it's just because I argue about that lady so many times.
There you go. That's the fire in Father Filaret's cabin right there.
Burn it down, baby.
Burn it down. Yeah. Well, cool. But yeah, this movie is cold, right? Yeah, but I did enjoy it.
And the coldness starts with the Nazis who, this was the thing that really, in the beginning, when the Nazis, they have him kill a captain, and then they leave him alive.
Right.
And my husband was like, oh, that is just like those kind of people. They make you expose your uttermost weakness, and then they leave you to despise yourself for it.
Yeah.
And that's the cruelty of the world.
Right.
Which is why we need God's mercy.
Yeah.
To show us there's something more than that.
For certain.
But that's, it's cold. It's cold from the beginning.
Yeah. And then, yeah, after that scene in the 40s, and yeah, it's winter for the rest of the movie. And yeah.
Yes.
Just moving that coal back and forth and back and forth.
When they're moving, when they're taking him to the island for burial with that cross, is spring coming? I can't remember. I don't think we get any signs.
I don't think we get any signs, yeah.
Not even one freaking daffodil. Come on. Help us out, man.
Oh, man. Yep. You bet. Wow. But shoot. Well, yeah. Give us a lot to talk about. So. But I do like it.
It wasn't, well, I suppose maybe I might watch it again sometime. Never say never. But it wasn't a movie that grabbed me. But it also wasn't a movie I didn't like. I'm usually not left in neutral mode, as everybody knows. But this one, I just kind of got done and went, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. A lot of things to think about.
Yeah. This time, where did you find it to watch, by the way? Where were you able to get
Premier
a copy?
Premier Video.
Okay,
you
know, good.
That video store.
Right. So you have like the most awesome video store on the planet. This used to be on Netflix. It wasn't anymore. So I bought a copy and, so now it's in my small pile in the pool room. Right. But yeah, this is one that I'll watch now and then for sure.
I was afraid I was going to have to buy it and only afraid because I was like, I can't tell if I'm going to like this, you know, but I felt so they had it. They had one copy.
And it is in Russian, you know, it's a Russian movie. So you're reading subtitles.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But we got done and my husband went, wow, that's a hard movie. And I was like, that's okay. Sometime I'm going to make Scott watch The Mill and the Cross and I'm going to get him back.
The Mill and the Cross. I'm ready. That's awesome.
Which is a crazy movie like this, not like this at all, but that we love and that people watch and go, what did I just see? I don't
what
know.
What on earth? Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So.
Oh, cool. Well, I look forward to whatever you throw at me.
Yeah, but it was definitely good. It definitely gives you tons to think about, and it's not that long. I mean, really a great Lenten movie.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, what's up next?
Oh, speaking of cool.
Speaking of Lent, no.
Oh.
How about The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes?
Woo-hoo!
By Arthur Conan Doyle. Yeah. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That's coming out on Holy Week. That. Yeah, that's coming out on Holy Week, I think.
Oh, is it?
I think it is.
I don't know if we can really tie that in at all.
I don't know if we can either, but but we'll talk about it before Holy Week.
Yeah, thank goodness.
So it'll be part of our Holy Week. How funny. It's funny, I had to get to pay more attention to that.
Yeah, now we're going to have to think about it from a totally different angle. Yeah, but I love those stories, so I'm really glad you picked them.
Oh, glad. Good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about that. So, all right. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, have a great couple of weeks.
Yes, we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.